WBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard live on the web at, Miss Ellen?
Live on the web at 11, what, 1510, WWBC.com.
Ellen is still
I'm
in
like
the hospital.
Still in, yeah. I'm still like focusing on other things.
So for friends who are tuning in today, my name is Sita Biggie. This show is action-packed today. We have a really full studio because it's the holidays. Christmas is here. Christmas Eve is tomorrow, and Christmas Day is actually following that day. And I know I'm wearing red because I feel very festive. But before we go around and introduce our guests, we just want to thank all our listeners for tuning in 2019 and making Viewpoint with Sita and Friends such a successful show. Miss Ellen, we've had a lot of great sponsors.
Fantastic.
That I have pretty much given curry chicken to here and there along the way. And the thing is, we, with the help of the good Lord upstairs, we are blessed so that we can carry on for next year. We have had someone
going into our ninth year.
Right. We've had our sponsors, one of our great sponsors, Medfast, Dixie Crossroads,
Jotkoff,
Cloud9 Sleep Shop. They all renewed for next year. And so we'll be able to bring on the nonprofits and have other shows. And then certain people will help us with their airtime as well.
Yeah. Hard to believe. 52 weeks, you figure, and two guests almost per week. We've had a lot of fantastic guests that have been in the studio and have called in from all over the world.
Right. So before we introduce our guests, I just want to say that, you know, Christmas is a time, the holidays is a time when I think all of us should pledge to use our human mind and our human body for three things: good thoughts, good words, and great action. And I think if we live our life like that 365 days a year, when the holidays comes around, we won't have a lot of hard lifting to do, like forgiveness and trying to make a difference, because we would have done it all year round.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So our guest today, our in-studio guest today, we have, we're going to be having Hannah, who's going to be singing a couple of Christmas carols for us later. And she's here with her mom and her dad. Hi. And they're sitting waiting on their turn a little bit. Next to me, we have Dr. Miriam Moore with the Brevard Homeless Coalition, and we also have Michelle Eau Claire is here, and then we've got our friend Dr. Martha Joseph Watts, affectionately called Auntie Marcella, who's going to be talking later on with us about her book and all the difference she's making helping children with language arts and writing and their skills and things like that. And I love it. So welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Full studio.
Do you want to, at this point, give our listeners the website for Hannah? Do you have it there with you?
I don't have it.
Okay.
I don't have it. We'll have her start that out one before she...
Okay. So we'll do that later in the show. But for now, we're going to start our show off today with Dr. Moore and Michelle. Because, you know, around Christmas time, we all think about our families and getting together with each other. But there's so many people who are actually still homeless in Brevard County and around our nation and actually around the world. So, Dr. Moore, just let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the Brevard Homeless Coalition.
Thank you first for having me, and Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We've become quite good friends because of this show. Thank you.
Yes. The Brevard Homeless Coalition is a coalition of provider agencies that assist people with homeless and homeless prevention services throughout the county. One of those agencies is Volunteers of America, and that's where Michelle works. So would you like to tell us a little bit about what you're doing at VOA these holidays?
Oh, thank you. I I am the Ministry Outreach Coordinator and Community Specialist for Volunteers of America, Florida. With the Ministry Outreach Coordinator, I connect churches to us and us to churches in order to make sure that we're giving back, that it's not always about people giving to us, but we're giving back as well. The Community Specialist piece is doing outreach and engagement with homeless and the community. I literally go into the woods, go to camps, look for homeless, try to get them engaged with services, and, you know, the ultimate goal is to work towards permanent housing. Our goal is, you know, the organization I work for, we mainly focus on homeless veterans, but we do work with civilian population of homeless as well.
Right. And you were homeless yourself at one point in your life, too.
Yes. 28 years ago, I found myself homeless up in Baltimore, Maryland.
Wow. You know,
it is.
You know, well, isn't that what life is all about? All of us, you know, we give back to our community. We give back to the universe through life experience.
Absolutely.
And, of course, through education and making people aware of what's going on around us and to other people as well. And so, but roughly, how many people are homeless in Brevard? Do we have a number?
Well, as of our point in time count back in 2019, there's about 815 we had counted as literally homeless. And so that number is probably a little bit higher than what it is. And we do have our annual point in time count census coming up in the end of January.
Right. And Miriam, how does the agencies work with each other?
Oh, there's a lot of ways that they work together, but the biggest part is probably coordinated entry. And they collaborate to combine resources, which is funding, case management services, and identify housing and to get people housed, and then case management to keep people housed, because sometimes you have to keep working with people to keep them housed. But the agencies all work together, and sometimes you'll have multiple agencies working with one family or even one individual.
And we know, I mean, we're going to have a few days in December or maybe early January when it's going to be pretty cold, and people are going to need to shelter in place, actually. So do we have any shelter services that people should know about and who to call?
We have 4 cold night shelters in Brevard County. So when the temperatures drop to 45 degrees or below, the EOC will notify the people that run those shelters, and they'll get their volunteers together, and they'll put out notices that these shelters are opening. And we have one in Titusville, one in Cocoa, one in Melbourne, and one in Palm Bay.
I know. I know we've given that number out before on our show. Last year we did that, and people did use it. So, Ellen, later on in the show, if you could find it, we'll give that number out again. Michelle, so how does Volunteers of America, Florida do in Brevard County? What do they do in Brevard County, Florida?
Well, we do outreach. Our biggest program is funded through the Veterans Administration, where we have an 80-bed transitional housing facility for veterans. Our biggest population are those that have clinical needs, so substance abuse and mental health needs, and our goal is to work with them towards independent living, becoming stable, getting employment or disability, and moving on to permanent housing.
And how is it funded?
It's funded through the Veterans Administration.
Oh, wonderful. Thank God, right? God knows we need it. We have if you look on Facebook sometime and you see what's happening to some of the veterans, you wonder sometimes where, you know, thank God we have groups and organizations that reach out, because a lot of the veterans don't have family. They don't have friends. We've seen where certain people die and there's nobody to attend their funeral.
Right.
And I've seen communities go out and help with things like that as well. And how has the point in time count changed over the last 4 years?
Well, we've had a reduction in homelessness from 1,178 persons to 815 since 2015. So there, even though it is a small reduction, we are working together as a community, as a collaboration. Our biggest need is always affordable housing. We have those, we have interventions, and what we're seeing is people that are homeless are staying homeless longer or becoming homeless because of affordable housing.
Right, and so when is the next point in time? When, how do they count that, and who is helping to collect the data for that?
It's done through volunteers. The point in time count is January 26th. Through January 27th. It's a 24-hour period. And up on the Brevard Homeless Coalition website, people can get the information on how to register, where to show up. And it's actually a collaboration of volunteers throughout the entire community going out with, in groups to actually do surveys with the homeless.
So, Dr. Moore, you've been out in the woods.
Yes.
Lead us through one of those missions when you get that phone call. I know it's unsafe, I'm pretty sure, but you do, and Michelle does it as well. So tell our audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how does one get a phone call to go out into the woods, rescue a family, and what happens then?
A lot of times we get a phone call through 211, which is where our coordinated entry process begins. They'll contact them, and they'll work with the family really for a couple weeks to see if they can do diversion. And then if nothing is working, we send somebody out. They send a case manager out to meet with them. And in some cases, we have a program like our Safe Overnight Stay program, where if we have a family that's first-time homeless, they may qualify to get into one of three houses in different areas of the county that we have to get them in quickly so that we can work with them and get them intensive case management services and then get them rapidly rehoused. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. We just don't have shelter like big shelters like other counties do. We have providers that provide shelter programs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes a while to get into those programs.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, and just people in general in the community, they don't understand that you could be working with somebody who's homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You could be sitting in a cafeteria with someone who's homeless. You could be in Publix or anywhere here, and someone is homeless. They're living in their car, or they just don't know where their next warm bed is coming from. How do we get more people to pay attention to what's going on around them? Because it's not just a guy outside holding up a cardboard saying, feed me today. You want to take that, Michelle? You can.
I think getting people involved is just care. You know, we've gotten to a place that we don't pay attention to the people that are around us. We stay very focused and don't really see the needs. Sometimes there's signs, you know, around, you know, they may be hungry, you know, they're not eating lunch every day. Maybe there's a reason, or maybe they're coming in with the same clothes on all the time. You know, there's subtle signs that are there. And sometimes it's just a conversation. If I get to know you, you know, I may be more likely, if I can trust you, to be able to share, you know, like for myself, I lived in the back of a flower shop and I didn't tell anybody. For at least a month, and because I was working at the flower shop and I was thinking, oh, I could resolve this myself. Well, then I found out I'm pregnant. Oh, what do I do now? You know, kind of things. It becomes more problems, and I had to humbly kind of pick up the phone and call my family, and they say, okay, well, we'll send your father up to come get you. They had moved to Florida, but I couldn't stay with them. So then what? You know, fortunately, Genesis House, which is here in Melbourne, I became, you know, I went and lived there and had my twins and was there for a year and finished college and, you know, those type of things. But some of it is just embarrassment. You don't want people to know.
Right. And just such a shame. It's,
yes.
It's a stigma. I know.
Well, and that's what we have, too, is there's people that are homeless that are working two jobs.
Right.
You know, so, yes. I mean, it's not, you know, the shame is, and the embarrassment of it all is, here you are doing what you think you should be doing, is out working and providing, and things are just so expensive.
Well,
you
the
know,
rent.
We talked about affordable.
Well, the rent.
We've talked
the
about
rent
affordable
control.
Housing a couple
I mean,
of times.
You know, in order for someone to afford a decent place to live, with utilities they can afford, you have to be making at least maybe $17 or $18 an hour. How can someone working for minimum wage afford a place, right?
Yeah, Brevard County is not the cheapest place to live, for sure.
It's actually almost $23 an hour for Brevard County is what somebody would have to be making to be able to afford everything they need to live.
Right.
And I also want to add that with that stigma and that embarrassment that comes along with being homeless, we have a lot of students in Brevard County that have been identified. There's liaisons at each school that work with them that identify them so that they can get connected to services because they have a lot of rights under McKinney-Vento. And the schools can help the children make sure they stay in the same school and give them that stability and help the families. But a lot of times it's hard to identify them, especially some of the teenagers, because they don't want their friends to know that they're experiencing homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so it really is hard to find people to even get them connected to services unless they call or contact somebody and let them know.
Right? Well, you know, the thing is we live in a society where people judge each other so much. And I think people are afraid to come forward. They don't want to be judged. They don't want somebody to pity them. Because I know coming to the United States, immigrating to the United States, I experienced a lot of, I wouldn't say I experienced it, but I know of people who were homeless. And sometimes there were like 10 to 12 people living in one home. And there's a lot of family dynamics as well. Like you were saying, a family member does not get along with one. And next thing you know, somebody's saying, well, I'm leaving. And where do you go? You don't have your proper papers and you don't have your citizenship, you don't have your green card, where are you going to go? You can't really get services. And so that's one of the things I think with the homeless situation that you really have to know who is afraid to come forward. It's not just American citizens too. They're undocumented people that are terribly afraid to come forward, you know, because they're afraid someone might call the police on them. And no matter how difficult some people think they have it, people are risking everything to come here.
Exactly.
And are afraid.
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, let's touch on a different topic here for a second. You know, it's Christmas time. It's the holidays. And sometimes people are afraid to bring up conversations on their table about what's going on in our nation and around Brevard or whatever. But I think it's a good thing to talk to each other about the person next door, the homeless man next door, the children in school who may have school lunches Monday through Friday, but Saturday and Sunday, do we really care what they're going to be eating? There's a lot of that. And I know we've talked about that before on the show. How do we identify people who are potentially going to be alone for Christmas or children who are homeless? I mean, do you all have agencies that represent that kind of a situation?
Yes. And I'll let Michelle talk about some.
A lot of the agencies work within our own population that we're serving, you know, for ourselves with the veterans. Most of our veterans in our programs have no families. So we do Christmas. We bring churches in, you know, to do Christmas with them just to make them feel welcomed and those kinds of things. South Brevard Sharing Center, working with families, collected Christmas gifts and distributed to families. They were even distributing Christmas trees. And trying to identify. A lot of it is done through, you know, you'd be surprised, you know, as you know, on Facebook. People are always talking about needs. And the biggest thing we do as agencies, we just want to verify because we don't want somebody to take something from somebody that they don't really need. It's verifying it. But agencies go over and above. Last year, there were so many toys for Toys for Tots collected that they didn't even distribute them all. They warehoused them for this year. And, you know, and then collected more, but the numbers are slowly starting to rise.
So what can we do to spread the word about what Volunteers for America is doing and what the Brevard Homeless Coalition is doing? Give us your websites. So if somebody wanted to go on and maybe volunteer or see what the wish list is for the upcoming year, just give us your websites or how to get in touch with both of you.
For Volunteers of America, it's www.voaflorida.org.
You know, and I know for Brevard Homeless Coalition,
it's just Brevard Homeless Coalition.org.
But I mean, how do we get more people to be compassionate and care about what's going on? I mean, you know,
I think they need to come visit us. You know, always tell people, come see what we do. You know, come spend a day with me going through the woods, going talking to people. I mean, there are, you know, I'll get a phone call. There's a guy that says he's a veteran holding a sign on the side of the road. I spent 3 weeks harassing him. Not literally harassing him, but just saying, I just want to talk with you. I just want to see what's going on. Can I help you? Can I guide you in the right direction? And I think my persistence helped, because then we sat down and we had lunch. Yes, I was able to verify he was a veteran. I was able to make a phone call to our transitional housing facility, and within 2 days, he was in our transitional housing facility. Sometimes it's just having a conversation when you see somebody, what is really going on? You know, because there's a difference between holding a sign and I just need to pay my rent or I need cigarettes. For those that are literally homeless and holding a sign, we need to have a conversation.
And I've heard that a lot of people prefer to stay in the woods because they're used to it. They've got their own community. How do you get that mentality, that community out?
It takes really forming a relationship with somebody, mm-hmm. building that trust, and then being able to convince them that you really do have
their best interest. Yeah,
you are able to help, or you want to help.
And I think it would be heartbreaking when you see children living in the woods.
Absolutely. And I think part of it is, too, is they have people that come into the woods and they'll drop off a few things and say they'll do something and they don't. And then there are people like myself and Daily Bread and South Brevard Sharing Center who we're in that camp every week. So our goal is to build a relationship with them so they do trust us, not bringing them just supplies and empty promises.
So, I mean, what causes someone to go into the woods, though? I mean, have they been there for a long time? I mean, how do they set up a camp? How do they know where to go? Are there designated areas where someone could just go in if they're homeless and live?
Well, there's any area where you see patch of trees in Brevard County could potentially be a camp for persons experiencing homelessness.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, where so many people are living one paycheck away from being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems okay. You know, they've got a car, they've got a home, their children. And then in 2 weeks, everything could change. Mm-hmm. Just if you lose your job, if company moves out of town, what if somebody gets sick and they have no insurance? I think, you know, these are things we all have to think about. You know, even though it's the holidays, people don't stop having to pay their bills. The bill collectors are coming. And,
right.
You know, all of us need to start looking around and see, you know, what can we do to make life easier and ease the pain and suffering for human beings? Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people are raised that way anymore. It's almost like we have to go back to basics, how it used to be, that you have to care about your community. You have to care about your neighbor.
I think about my ministry, you know, and what did Jesus do? Who did he sit with? Those that were the most neediest. You know, he didn't go sit with the Pharisees and the kings and all them. He went and sat with the everyday people and fed them, because that's what we're supposed to emulate, is who Jesus is. So.
Right, and not only at Christmas and Easter time.
Right.
You're supposed to do that 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone at work said that a lot of people see an ease. And I said, see and ease. And she says, yeah, they go to church for Christmas and Easter. And I said, and what happened the rest of the time? Well, they're too busy. Well, you can't be too busy, right? You have to do it. And I think that's where this is a good time for us to bring,
one quick thing, just for all of our listeners that are out there, on CETA Media Inc. on Facebook, I've posted all of the websites that we've talked about. So if you're in need, there's the place to go. I've even posted the cold night shelters, so you have all of that information as well. But if you know somebody that's in need, obviously this is a great place to get a resource. Just go to CETA Media on Facebook. Or if you are in a position that you can donate or give time, this also be a great place for you to go and see the most neediest in Brevard and the places that keep the money right here in Brevard to be able to work with and help with a great ministry like Michelle has and the Homeless Coalition like Dr. Miriam Moore has.
So I think Paul is ready for us to, you want to break, I think, you know, sometimes the shows are so informative, and we all know that life changes through education, life experience. Just open your mouth and speak with someone. You might learn something that you didn't know before.
So true.
And it is Christmas time, and I think what uplifts a lot of us, the Christmas carols, and the memories
the only
we've
way
had
to spread holiday
with
cheers
our families
to
and our
voices.
Friends. And, you know, all of us have our memories of Christmas with our family and friends. And one such memory that I've had recently is having little Hannah sing at my home for my Christmas party. And I think that we know so many people who are homeless and so many people who are wishing for good cheer and good tidings. We should bring Hannah on to sing a song for us.
Absolutely.
And so we'll have Miriam and Michelle take a quick they'll take a quick break themselves right there on those chairs, and we'll bring little Hannah up.
So Hannah was at your house singing, correct? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that everyone saw the video, but she got so many likes and so many hits on that video of such the beautiful song that she sang at your home. Hannah, what's your website? I hear you have a website.
It's hannahstoski.net.
Hannah,
stawski.net.
All right. So that is on our Facebook page as well.
She's young, but she knows that website.
Yes, she does.
These kids. So Hannah, before you start singing, you know, our show, it's like we're sitting and just relaxing at home. Forget about the mics for now. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved with singing and acting and modeling and all this kind of stuff.
My mom found out that I sang, and ever since then, she's been training me, and I've been practicing. And your
mom said that she, when she was younger, she wanted to be a singer, but it didn't work out for her. So she's really happy that you're doing it, right, Mom?
Yes.
Yes. So Hannah, how are you doing in school?
I'm doing pretty good, yeah.
How are you keeping up with your works, your balance? Because in order to sing and go all over the state like you're doing, you have to keep your grades up. I know Mom's making sure that all that's done, and then you're singing on the side,
mm-hmm.
right? Is it tough to do both?
Yeah, it is sometimes.
Yeah, it is. And you recently tried out for America's Got Talent. How was it?
It was really exciting.
Yeah? Did you have to wake up very, very early to drive to Miami?
Yeah, really early.
Yeah? Were there a lot of people?
Yeah, there was like so many.
Well, you had a lot of fans rooting for you back here in Brevard. Because we think you're going to do it. So I think, do you feel comfortable to sing a song for us? I mean, whichever Christmas carol you want, Mom, you could set it up for her. Yeah, I think your mom's got your phone and you've got your background music and... Mm-hmm. Ellen here was invited to the party, but she missed it, so she's going to hear you sing. And
yes,
we have Dr. Martha here, who's going to also listen. But for our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, as you guys know, our show is very fun, unscripted. It's a very informative show, and we give out very valuable information every week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And so I thought, since we were doing a show about the homeless, and then we're going to talk about education later, we'll just break it up a little bit and have Hannah come in and sing two songs for us. So she's going to sing now, and then she's going to sing before we close off our show for Christmas. So go ahead.
Take it away.
Take it away. She's going to sing. Just raise your hand when you're ready, because we're on live radio, and we don't want you to miss any precious time. So you ready? Okay. Go
ahead. Holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and never pining till He appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees. Oh, hear the angel voices. Oh, night divine.
Of Viewpoint with
we'll be right
friends
back with our second segment on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare and these great sponsors. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And boy, I am energized. That Christmas carol just got me in the mood for Christmas.
I know.
So our second segment is with Dr. Martha Joseph Watts, affectionately called Auntie Marcella by her nieces and nephews. She's a former English teacher who currently serves as a literacy coach with the Brevard Public Schools. She is best known for her writing to respond. It's called WTR Process, an approach for guiding students through evidence-based writing. Your bio is extensive, so I'm going to stop talking and have you talk a little bit. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me, Sita.
Yes, this is wonderful. So tell us a little bit about yourself, a little background, where you're from. You have an accent like myself, which is beautiful. It's a sing-song accent.
Thank you. I am originally from the island of Dominica. That's between Guadeloupe and Martinique, for those who always ask. And for the last 15 years, I resided on the United States Virgin Islands, St. Thomas. In Dominica, I served as an elementary education teacher. And then in St. Thomas, I worked with secondary education. And I also taught part-time at the University of the Virgin Islands as language arts teacher as well.
She even forgot what she's done, you see?
I know. Well, we're all kind of forgetting a little bit.
So I've been at Brevard for the past 6 years, and I've taught on the high school level as a language arts teacher, and now I serve as a literacy coach at Jackson Middle School.
Well, you make the citizens of Dominica proud, the Virgin Island proud, and the Caribbean. And I didn't even know about you till my friend Mark Lyons told me. So we have to give Mark a round of applause for connecting us, you know, for the referral. It was wonderful. So you've been doing so many things, and you know, we need somebody like you nowadays. With children are not writing anymore. Penmanship is not something that's been taught in schools like it used to, and children are not taking the time to read and understand and comprehend what's going on. How did you come up with that series, the WTR, and what made you do that?
As a 10th grade teacher, the school I worked at in the Virgin Islands, the Charlotte Amalia High School, one of our community sponsored the Scholastic magazines for our school. And our school was literally littered with Scholastic magazines, and kids were just not interested in reading it at all. And one day I gave my students an assignment to do, and I said, I want you to read this article and write in response to it. And it's like almost as a chorus. They said, how? And so right there in front of the classroom, I created this 5-step strategy that my students would write. So first they had to identify the article, then they had to summarize what they read in 2 to 3 sentences. And the most important thing, they had to react. And their reaction had to be either evaluative, synthesis, or analysis. So they had to either analyze, or they had to evaluate, or they had to. So in other words, it involved critical thinking.
Right,
that was
right.
The most important part. And
that seems to be a common thing in the Caribbean with school, critical thinking.
Right.
And creativity. Whereas here in America, I'm not sure what happened to the creative side and
there's no divergent thinking.
Yeah, they don't want to. Like, they want to teach like what's only on the test, but not so in the Caribbean.
So what happened was I noticed that the kids were just happy with just telling you what the story was about. And I didn't want them to end there. And so I started the whole idea of the process. And I kept it in my class because as teachers, you know, teaching is a private affair. So I kept it for myself and I had it in my classroom alone. And one day a teacher was gone for about a month. And another teacher says to me, do you have anything to share? And I passed it on. And before I knew it, it became a department phenomenon. Then it became business and English.
A great resource.
And then the school adapted the whole thing. And then eventually I just started passing it on to the districts. And then one teacher said to me, if you don't publish this thing, it's going to become everybody's own and you would not even remember that it was yours. And I said, that's a good idea.
Yeah, she wants you to put your stamp on it.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that started in 2009. And in 2012, I actually published it for the first time.
Well, thank you. Because, I mean, I could see a need for that everywhere. You know, I did something similar when my kids were younger. Well, now they're all grown. But when they were little, I would tell them, you have to watch CNN for an hour a day. And I want you to write me a report. So I called it the news report. And they had to write whatever was on the news. And if they didn't know it, they had to research it. And those were the days when you had the encyclopedias. And so they had to open them and read about the countries
that they were. And up to today, my children always say, you know, that helped us so much. Just writing about what we saw on the news and researching the countries, the cultures, the people, the laws of the land, whatever they were talking about. And I think we all have something in us that we could give back.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that the writing to respond process does. The synthesis aspect of it always gives students an opportunity to research. So if I said, what would happen if? So if you do not know, then you would have to find out. And a lot of times, whatever that thing that they're reading about, sometimes it's new, background knowledge. I have no idea what that is. So if you're asking me to solve a problem that I have no idea what to how to, then I'm going to have to do that extra research.
And they do it in teams.
You can do it anyway. And so what the one thing about the writing to respond process is that it is just student, how would I say it? It's paced. It's not, for example, everybody's on the same pace. You can have your child read whatever their grade level would be on. So it is something that can be used, although it says grades 3 to 5, you can choose that text that best suits your child. So it's schools have been using it, parents have been using it, and even students on their own can use it. So that's the whole idea, that it's not fixed, that it's not just static.
Yeah.
It is that kind of fluid that anybody can use it to suit their particular needs.
Right. And, you know, Ellen, you know, I've told you this before, and I think I touched about it in my book when I wrote it. You know, in America, I once spoke to a woman who was so concerned that the bus that her child rode to school didn't have air conditioning. And I said, where we come from in the islands, we're lucky if we have a bus.
Right.
You know, right. You're talking about a bus with air conditioning, please, you know. And then they'll complain, well, you know, the schools doesn't have proper desk and, you know, in the islands, people are so grateful to have books, to have mentors, to have someone to guide them and teach them. And I think it's in contrast sometimes, it's wonderful what you have done to teach so many people. Now you've brought that to the United States as well. And it's here. People are using it as well, the WTR series.
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. So when I came to the United States, I realized that there was such a great emphasis on writing in response to the test prompt. And so I decided when I did my new version, I actually went ahead and added writing to respond to text in the front and test prompts in the back, because there was such an emphasis from, well, the Common Core, of course. It's like that in the Virgin Islands now because they have adapted the Common Core you know, standards as well. And so from the third grade in Florida and in the fourth grade or vice versa, fourth grade and third grade, students are expected to write essays. So I decided, well, okay, if there's such an emphasis, instead of just helping you write in response to text only, let's teach you how to write in response to test as well.
Yeah.
And so the second edition has that for the grades 6 to 12, and also for the grades 3 to 5 students, I have the workbook that where they can actually get steps as to how to write in response to the text that they read daily, and also how to write the narrative, the informative, and the argumentative essay from their fourth grade.
So why do you think, Doctor, we had so much pushback against Common Core here? Because I was raised pretty much with the Common Core, where you had to think about writing. They wanted you to imagine and write. But here, a lot of people were against it.
You see, I think what they're against is just the whole idea that it just should be that only. Because I too have
an want an option.
I have the issue where when you go to school and they would say, oh, we don't write the narratives anymore. We should be focusing only on the argumentative. We wrote. I mean, who's going to tell our stories? If we focus so much on the narratives and the the argumentative and the informatives, which is just this style of writing, which is what the Common Core really stresses, what happens to our storytellers? Who tells our stories?
Right.
I'm a storyteller too. I grew up under my grandma who was a storyteller. So I'm thinking that it shouldn't be that polarized. It should be more a fluid, you know, area where I can do that imaginary writing, I can do that narrative, I can do the informative, I can do the argumentative. I think what the people who are against Common Core, what they're stressing, I think, is probably let's have that kind of flexibility, not
right.
That stringent or that polarized whole idea.
So you took it to another level. You took your writing, what you learned in the writing to respond. And you, Auntie Marcella, you went on and you wrote these adventures of Yeah. Is it Yanni?
Correct.
And so all of this just came together from, it started in the Virgin Islands and Dominica and all your grandmother's stories and everything. And then it's come to head in an alligator?
Yes.
So now she's written all these books about this little guy.
It's kind of iguana
looking.
An iguana, yes. An iguana. An iguana. Oh my God. An iguana.
So you're right. So the WTR actually, the Yanni came first in WTR. So my K through 2 book, one of the examples in here is Iyanni, and it's just a 2-page story with Iyanni. She starts in one end and ends up in the other end because she was an adventurer. And then I just thought, well, you know what? I'm going to write about all of the places that I've lived. And I thought I was going to say all around Florida, all around the Virgin Islands, all around the Caribbean, something. And I decided, you know what? Let's begin with Iyanni.
And Iyanni is an iguana.
She's an iguana.
And she's got all these universal themes that, gosh, Lord knows we need it today in this country,
exactly.
Everywhere. Friendship, perseverance, resilient, independence, accountability, migration. Boy, that little iguana got around. So, I mean, so why an iguana? Out of all the animals, you know, we know about the agouti who lost his tail,
yes,
the tortoise and the hare and all that. And you took it and you said, forget it, I'm going to go with an iguana.
Two reasons. Iguana, number one reason, in the Virgin Islands, the iguana is all over. She's very respected. She walks across, she eats in the restaurant.
She's proud.
Yeah, she's proud. Everybody kind of treats her like she's very well accepted in the Virgin Islands. You go to the store, to the tourist store, you will find a stuffed iguana there. You will see a, you know, picture of an iguana. You know, she's all over. You buy a table mat, it's going to be an iguana on there. But not only that, the other thing is, the iguana is not native to the Virgin Islands. The iguana came from Brazil. And the iguana can be found on every island in the Caribbean.
That's right. We have them in Trinidad too.
Exactly. So I felt that she was such a representation for all of us. All of us who've been moving up that Caribbean chain, we've ended up in Florida. We are in all over the place. And right here in Florida, we have some in Miami, and they call it a menace. They don't like it down there because it's been...
They don't treat the iguana with respect.
Yeah,
some people kill him and cook him and curry too.
So
what do you think, young readers? What do you think they'll get from the story from Iyanni?
So I want two things. I want young readers to be able to look at the cultural diversity. So they will see that Iyanni is eating things. For example, a child on the mainland is going to see Iyanni eating things that they're not familiar with, like kennips and soursop and those things. They're probably going to ask or research, what are these? It's also going to give them a chance to figure out what is native to us, where I live. Children who are in the Caribbean, they're going to see, well, the things that I am familiar with are in the books that I'm reading.
Yeah.
So they're going to see the mangoes.
It lifts them up.
Exactly.
Makes them feel good about being from the Caribbean. Yeah.
All of those things. I have cultural representation. For example, I have a mention here of steel dancers. You know, in the Caribbean, we have, every island has carnival. And there's never going to be a carnival in the Caribbean without a steel dancer or moko jumper.
So Iyanni is also dancing.
So she's not dancing. She's just moving along on branches like somebody balancing on steel dancers. So just using that whole idea of the cultural atmosphere, kids who are reading that, they're going to be, it's like, okay, the places that I am familiar with are in the books that I'm reading. And then the child who is outside of that setting, they're going to say, oh, well, this is what's over there. For example, one child told me, well, if it's on the island, it's only going to be coconuts. And so I was deliberate in making sure that the coconut and the banana was barely mentioned.
You put the soursop in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because...
But how can parents, like here in the U.S., mm-hmm, parents and schools utilize the book to impact the knowledge for children here?
And that's the most important thing. And so that's why it's so filled with themes. So Iyanni and her friends, there's a lot of camaraderie. There's a lot of accountability. They're going out to play, and they're making sure that I know where you're going. So we did all of this activity together, but now we're going our separate ways. I need to know where you're going, and this is where we meet at the end. So there's accountability. There's a lot of resilience. She finds herself in a position away from her friends, away from her family, but she has to bounce back. There's perseverance. What do I do? Do I just step out in danger and just die because I am in trouble or because I am in an uneasy position? So there are lots of themes in there. And also, so teachers can use the themes. They can also use the cultural setting,
how to cope. It's going to teach your children how to cope. Because, you know, people from the islands, we do know how to cope.
We do.
You know, once, I remember once we had no electricity in Tortoise Island where I lived. And one of my neighbors came over and she said, I know if anybody knows how to make coffee, it'll be you. And there I was in the yard with three stones and some barbecue. And I put some coals in there and I was cooking out in the yard. I knew how to do it.
Yes.
Because that's what we were taught as children. You have to make do with what you got.
Exactly.
So this is a series. Mm-hmm. Tell us which one is first, second, and what we should expect third.
Okay, so the Voyage West is first. It starts off when she's a teenage girl and she is with her friends. They're having fun and she ends up climbing really high and falls in something and ends up on the West and she is in trouble. But she has to bounce back then. And what I decided to do instead of ending, which is going to be the last book, which is The Mints. I haven't gotten to that one yet. But the first one, I went back to the beginning where Iyanni actually is born. And this is where her curiosity is. Her mom is telling her about Brazil and where they came from and what her ancestors were like. And she's just asking those questions as, why did you come here if over there was better? Which are the questions that all our students, our children ask us.
They ask you and I.
Yes.
Our children ask us, why did you leave Trinidad if it was so good?
Yes.
Well, because there was lack of opportunities, my friend.
Nice. You know? Exactly. Yeah. So this is another. This is what's going to happen when parents read that book with their kids or teachers in classrooms. They can deal with the whole issue of migration. There's another big idea of community. I heard the homeless people talking earlier. And Iyanni and her parents and her sisters, they're actually going to the home for the blinds to read to them. They're going to the infirmaries to actually help the elderly. They're going to the places with the injured veterans to actually help them recuperate. So there's a whole idea of community in that particular one that people can actually use it as projects. How about we go to a school for the blind or somewhere and read to people, or not really school for the blind, but at least where blind elderly are.
Right.
So
you set the book in which island did you?
It is in St. Thomas, Virgin
Islands. In St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. And what the significance of that is?
Because I lived there for 15 years. And not only that, but when I was creating the workbooks, it was for students in that particular setting.
I see.
And I wanted kids to read about things where they live. But at the same time, I wanted to use the iguana because she lives everywhere else.
Any reason why you didn't set her from in Dominica or in the United States?
Right. So the first reason was because I was creating four kids in that area. But at the same time, I wanted Iyanni to be moving. So I want her to be, what I have for her, for my future plans for Iyanni, is that she's going to be that Caribbean icon that's going to tell people about the Caribbean. It's going to, because she is present in every Caribbean island.
Yes, and you've had a lot of really positive feedback about Iyanni.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Iyanni being made into a movie.
That's my dream, Sita. How did you know that?
Because, you know, when I saw you and Mark told me about you, I said, you know, this kind of sounds like Pirates of the Caribbean kind of ish. But then, you know, you were right about people when they think about Trinidad and Jamaica and St. Lucia and Martinique and Dominique and all these places. They always think about coconuts, people drinking, people fetting, people spreeing, people calypso. But they never think that, the islands have a lot more to offer.
Very rich.
The culture is so rich. And there's so many people from all different parts of the world that ends up in the Caribbean islands.
Yes.
But we live as one. No matter if we have our powwows, we still learn how to deal with conflict and live.
Mm-hmm.
So where can we find a book?
On my website, buddingwriters.com, buddinwriters.com, or on amazon.com, or on ingramsparks.com.
And what if a teacher or an educator is interested in the WTR series? Where can they find it on Amazon as well?
They can find it with me as well. And one of the other things is that community partners have been supporting me. In Dominica and in the Virgin Islands, I've had banks, I've had retired physicians. I've had people who wanted to sponsor schools because the schools are in underserved settings, and they would actually pay for those resources and I would send it to them. And I would also provide consulting, like how to present it to their teachers as well.
Well, you know, this is what our world needs. We need more people like you, because, you know, so many people are lost. They need guidance. And so Dr. Martha Joseph Watts is what we need right now, even for the Homeless Coalition. It would be wonderful if you could sit down with those people too and show them how Iyanni evolved. Mm-hmm. Iyanni.
and how we can help kids in that setting as well. Because a lot of those kids in that setting, they do not have the internet, they do not have all of those, and these are, we don't need any internet for those at all. And that's one of the areas. These are the people that I focus on more, is people in underserved settings, to make sure that they can get the same knowledge and the same skills that they need to be able to write and do well on those tests, even if they're homeless or they are in schools that have no internet or none of those.
Well, you've made your grandmother proud, Auntie Marcella. Marcella, and all your nieces and nephews, and me being from the Caribbean, I feel you. I understand what you're saying, because I come from a similar background, and that's how the people in the islands live. We are taught from birth to take your life experience and help other people. And, you know, in America, they have a saying, they want to pull people up by the bootstrap. But you can't pull people up by the bootstrap if they don't got a boot.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So you got to give them a boot first, right? Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And I really look forward to being with you again at some point.
We have to bring you back. You have so much. And I want to hear more about Ianni, this little guy.
And so all of the information is posted on our CETA Media Inc. Facebook page, as well as the link to the Amazon page that has all of Auntie Marcella's books. So, but now we have Hannah joining us again.
Before Hannah sings, can you thank our other guests as well? Because we won't have time to thank them after the song.
Absolutely.
Dr. Moore
Dr.
and Michelle.
Dr. Moore and Michelle with the Volunteers of America. It's so great to have you back. Thank you so much for the education. And once again, all the information is there. So Hannah's
going to sing for our guests one more time, and all our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and she's going to take us into the new year, actually. Go ahead. This is going to be wonderful.
Mary, did you know that your baby boy one day walk on water? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you delivered will soon deliver you. Mary, did you know that your baby boy will give sight to a blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm a storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy has walked where angels trod? And when you kissed your little baby, you kissed the face of God. Oh, Mary, did you know? Oh, the blind will see.